Good morning, and welcome to WHTC Money Matters, the show that dispels the myths, unravels the mysteries, and explains in plain language the world of investing, as well as bringing you sound, common sense financial guidelines and strategies for life. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investment or investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Now, from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group in Zeeland, here are Jack Godfrey, Kerry Cooley, and Brent Kerwecker on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC, WHTC.com, and the WHTC app for your smartphone.
And good morning, Western Michigan and the snowy morning. This is Kerry Cooley. Hey, Jack, do we have you there this morning with us? Well, I don't hear Jack this morning, so we'll figure that out. I know Jack is calling in. Brent is out of the office. Good morning, Jack. We'll keep trying here, Jack, and we'll get you on here shortly. So this morning, we're going to be talking about Money Matters. Good morning, Jack. Hello, Jack. Okay. So, Jack, Jack, are you there? All right, listeners, we're going to keep rolling here. Hey, today's show is we're going to be talking about how to invest in a recession. And it's not saying that we are or are going to go into a recession. It's just that we're going to talk about different strategies as we look forward to kind of the end of the year. We have questions coming up, kind of a recap of the market, some good talking points here that I know Jack wanted to look at and talk about here. But I think one of the biggest things this week was the Federal Reserve met, and Mr. Powell came out and they raised interest rates again by 0.5%. But there was some very clear signs out there that we are having what's called disinflation, or inflation, the growth of it slowing down, things are moving in the right direction, meaning this. So the consumer price index came in at a plus 0.096, where estimates were at 0.3. So, Jack's one. So, listeners, this is kind of fun today. We're going to have fun today. Jack needs to call in again, and he's asking me via text. He goes, what's going on? So we'll figure this out, and I'll keep going here, and we'll get Jack in on the line here to join us and help us out. But I know he's calling in again, isn't he?
I don't have it on ours yet.
Okay. All right. Just hang on, Jack. We'll get you there. Listeners, yes, we will get you. So as I was mentioning, we're having disinflation, or the rate of inflation is slowing down. So the second consecutive month where the CPI has come in lower than expected, meaning it's not rising as fast. Core CPI also surprised to the downside. It rose just 0.19 as opposed to 0.3. And now the consumer price index now sits at 7.1% and 6%, down from when it was over 9% at one time. So that's good news. So this is right from our analyst. Good morning, Jack. Do you hear us? Yeah, for some reason, we're hearing background noise on Jack, but we can't hear him talking. So that is odd. So I don't know what's going on here. So this week, though, you know, even though we've had a good run on the market here the past couple days, it's taken a little breather on the market here. So let's run through some of the checklists here. Core goods move further into disinflation. I mean, used car prices. Car prices are going down. We're seeing some of the goods of food, and that is also settling down. Also, shelter, housing, rent, lodging, hotels, all those things are starting to settle down a little bit and creep back a little bit. And let's take a look at inflation remains, you know, still Powell said that inflation remains too high, but it's heading in the right direction. So looking here at how the market has responded this past week, let's just take a look at it here. So for one day, we have one day, 1 month, 3 months. So let's just take a look at the month here as of December 14. So across the board here, we have equities. Large over the past month have risen about 1%. We have mid-size also raising about 0.5%, and small cap stocks are still a little bit of a negative for the past month. But let's look at the one-year number. 1 year, large growth, because we always hear about that in the news. We always hear about the S&P 500. And large growth stocks, you're looking at down for the past year, past 12 months, down 22%. And switching over to large companies or value companies. And let me give you an example here. An example of a growth company is a company that the stock price is going up, usually don't pay much in dividends or interest, where value companies are ones that tend to pay better dividends. Not always, but tend to be. And they're things like we eat, we drink, things that we use every day are going to fall into this category. Utilities are just some examples that for the past year, they're only down 2.6%. So you're seeing a lot of things that are being affected more than other, but the whole value sector of large, medium, and small is one that's down the least over the past year. And the three-year average numbers are still all showing green, meaning large growth has averaged over 10% a year for the past 3 years. Large values averaged 7.25% for the past 3 years. That's a really good number for the past 3 years. And then your small and mid are a little bit lower than those numbers, but still all in the green. Switching to foreign, if we look at foreign investments and that out there, we're looking at things that have, for the past year, all down. Large, small, and emerging markets are all down, you know, 15 and 17%. Large foreign is down over 8. The three-year numbers in the green there, large foreign's average 2.8. Small foreign is average 0.8. And then emerging markets is still averaging down about 1% per year for the last 3 years here. So, listeners, thanks for bearing with us here. I mean, we're trying to work out the technical difficulties here with getting Jack on the line with us here. Let's look at the market here. S&P 500, we hear the market. That's what we hear in the news. The S&P 500 for the past year is down 12.3. For the past 3 years, it's still averaged a positive return of 9.6 or 9.7%. Different sectors of the market. The one that is leading the charge, as we've talked about before, is energy. For the past 12 months, it's up over 62%. It's averaged 19% per year return. And that is a great return here. And if we look beyond that, energy for the past, you know, prior to that, really didn't do a whole lot. It's gained its most in the past 12 months. Information technology is up over 15%, and healthcare is up over 13% average return per year for the past 3 years. So we're still trying to figure this out, and we're still getting a terrible disconnect sound. So now that is off. So listeners, we've worked through some of the things as far as the market. Let's flip over to the bond market here. The bond market is actually showing green per year for the last 3 years. Some of it may be only 0.5%. Some of it may be only 3.8%. That is something that is turning the corner a little bit, is the bond market. And year over year for the past 3 years, fixed income, fixed income is showing some good returns in treasuries, also shows high yield in the positive and bank loans. So that's a little bit of a uptick in the market there from what the Fed said this week. We're going to take a short break here. We're going to try and figure out this tech problem here and get us back in the line. We're going to be talking about how to invest during a recession. You're listening to Money Matters with Kerry Cooley and Jack Godfrey. Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Kerry Cooley, and we're still working through some of the tech difficulties. And Jack, do we have you live on the air with us? And we do not. So we'll figure that out here, and I'll keep going. But I know some of the things Jack and I talked about prior to the show here in prep for the show was, one, Jerome Powell and interest rates and how they are being increasing. And I know we're still trying to work through some of these tech difficulties. So, listeners, so thanks for your patience this morning. And so Jerome Powell and the Fed did increase interest rates this past week. And so what we're actually looking into is this is all Jerome has in their toolbox. They can put money into the system. They can take money out. They can increase interest rates. They can decrease interest rates. Jack and I have talked about how one of the biggest things that would really help out the whole market, and we're seeing some of it, but is seeing energy prices. We need to see energy prices, especially on fuel, to come down even more than what they have, because this affects everything. Think about it. If we are buying food at the grocery store, well, how does that food get there? It's either picked in the field, harvested. That takes energy for the combine or for the tractor. It also transporting, processing it, cleaning it, and transporting it to the warehouse, and then transporting it to the grocery store, and then from there. So all this energy costs, all what we're using in our trucks, diesel fuel, affects things from ships to transportation. So we could fix that. And, a lot of it's politics behind this and that we have to work through, and we just need to keep going. Now, the other big news in the past couple weeks is the Bitcoin company that is out there that went filed for bankruptcy. And this person that was handling the company, running the company, there was no board of directors, there was no oversight, there was no regulations, and that's one of the biggest things out here. In our business that we're in, we're highly regulated, and we have to follow rules, we have to stick to things that we can advertise, that we can't advertise, we can't, use words like guarantee and all that into this, and here you have this Bitcoin that was an unregulated company. And that, well, I should say, Bitcoin in and of itself is not regulated. And that is one of those things that, being unregulated, he was kind of free to do what they want at FTX with Bitcoin. Now, we're not saying we're recommending it. We're not saying that we're not recommending it. We're not saying it's good or bad. We're just saying here's some facts, and some things that weren't good about it. Let's talk about current CD rates. The current CD rates here at LPL, what we do is we can look across the whole U.S. and we can look across the U.S. and banks come to us to sell their CDs. These are FDIC insured CDs. And we have found that the rates that we've been able to pull in have even been better than some of the local rates with local banks and other financial institutions. So, for example, a one-year rate currently that we have available is sitting right around 4.75 to 4.8% for a 1 year. Now, those rates are subject to vary from day to day. They can go up, they can go down, but we have great rates. And listeners, if you have what we call lazy money, one of the strategies that we have been using is to ladder people with their money into CDs. And I'll use the example, my mom. She had some money to invest, and what we did is we took some of that money, invested it at a three-month rate, then we put some of that money in and invested it at a six-month, and some of it money at a nine-month. So we have money of hers coming due at different interest rate intervals and different time frames, because if rates continue to go up, the three-month CD comes due, we can renew that at a higher rate. The other difference is our CDs, they're, like I mentioned, they're FDIC insured, but they don't renew automatically. We have to call the customer, the investor, to ask them, what do they want to do with this money? Do they want to look at another CD? Do they want to look at another different investment? Those are some things that are hanging out. So our CD rates have been just outstanding. And so one of the other things that the strategies behind what are RMDs, required minimum distribution. So required minimum distributions are something that you have to complete when you're 70 and a half was the old rule. Now that age has been pushed out to 72. So what that means, listeners, is this. If you are 72 and older, have money in an IRA, there's a calculation called a required minimum distribution that you have to take out. Now, you can actually start the RMD at 70 and a half if you want to gift to nonprofit organizations. And here's the advantage of that. You can gift money with no taxes on your part to be paid on the required minimum distribution if you're gifting this money to a nonprofit. This could be your church. This could be any other nonprofit here in Western Michigan or anywhere else. You can. We have people do this all the time. So here's an example. One of our clients comes in every year about this time. She has her list, and we have eight different places where she donates her required minimum distribution to. She donates it some to her church, some to one of the a couple of the Christian schools that her grandkids attend, some to a hospital that helps, you know, so she is spreading this out, but this way she is not paying tax on this. She's helping out a nonprofit. Another way it's used commonly that I always encourage people, if you attend and give to your church on a regular basis, take your RMD and gift that to your church. Instead of putting offering in or writing a check, take your RMD and donate that, because then that way you're not paying tax on that. So here is kind of a false perception is, well, if I donate to my church, I can write that off on your taxes. Maybe. Used to be now that you have to have a standard deduction of over $24,000, meaning of donations, of other deductible expenses that you can write off to be able to use that, that you donate to charities. If you don't have that much that you gifted, you don't get any tax advantage on that. You get your standard deduction. So the best way is to take your RMD and gift it. So a lot of people don't have over that amount of deductions that they can take. So we've talked about a little bit about interest rates. We've talked about, you know, the Bitcoin thing and not being regulated. We've talked about current CD rates and some strategies. Let's take your question. So, listeners, again, thank you for your patience this morning. We've been working through some tech difficulties here, and we're working
through
it.
And good morning, Kerry.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Hey, we got you live. This is awesome. So, Jack, let's fall back on some things I've talked about. You probably heard some of it, but let's talk about Jerome Powell and interest rates this past week. They went up a 0.5%. Let's get your perspective on it. I know we've talked prior to the show on this, so share some of your...
I watched him live. You know, I was down in my basement office. I watched him live talk about it. You know, what really disappoints me, Kerry, is, and we talked about this morning pre-broadcast, is the fact that Jerome Powell has one move. In one move only, He's the Fed. He can raise rates, lower rates. That's the only thing he can do. That's the only thing he can do under his power. However, the reason we are in this situation today is one reason and one reason only. I want listeners to belly up to the table, brush the snow off the pumpkin, and listen. He will not throw his boss under the bus. That's President Joe Biden. If Joe Biden would come out tomorrow, not tomorrow, tomorrow, if he'd come out at his home in Delaware tomorrow and say, okay, I get it. We need an energy policy. We're going to open up the floodgates. The market would be up like a gazillion points come Monday because it's an energy problem, not a supply problem. And listening to the questions, I listened to all the questions, and this is where these rookies at CNBC, at CNN, Fox, whoever, ask questions. Not one of them asked a question on, do you think there's a direct correlation with energy? Nobody asked that question.
Well,
and maybe they could only ask certain questions.
Yeah, maybe they're rookies, but they probably get their questions screened of what they can and can't ask.
That is a terrible situation. So I have no idea. So that's my take is they're going to kill both. They're never going to kill demand because there is so much money out there today, whether you like it or not. The wealthy people have money and they're spending it. It's going to kill the middle class and the lower class. Not only we're raising rates on them in terms of trying to kill the demand is food is just out of sight. Energy is out of sight. More people are now heading home to work because they don't want to pay $4 a gallon gas or $3.34 today, whatever it is. They don't want to pay that. But once these oil reserves are gone, gas is going back up, skyrocketing. And then they're going to kill supply. And so once they start killing supply, we have a supply problem, a demand problem. And they'll say, geez, what happened? And I don't know why they don't get this, but they do not. That's my take.
Well, I think some of it is this. It's, you know, I think they get it, but behind if they do and come out and say, hey, we need to start drilling more and all that, that goes against the whole premise of what they are trying to do is get, you know, clean energy out there. And if they go that route, it goes against the grain of what they're set out to do. They're just...
I fully understand that. That's the stake in the ground, but they're putting a stake in the heart of America. That's where the stake is right now, not in the stake of energy. We all want windmills, and we all want clean water. I get that. But they're putting a stake in the heart of America. That's where the stake is going. It's going deep.
Yeah, they're trying to do it very quickly and not in a sensible way. So a few comments on FTX, the Bitcoin company that went bankrupt this past couple weeks ago. And what's your, you know, we talked about a lot of things there, how one, it's unregulated market. That whole sector is unregulated and they've kind of let that just become the Wild West.
You know, Bernie Madoff was doing this for a lot of years. I mean, he was taking money in the front door, shoving it out the back, and having a heck of a profit for himself and his family. Bernie Madoff was very smart. And he got caught because he did not have enough liquidity. And that's what happened to FTX, liquidity. People wanted to get their money out. There's no money to get out. It's gone. Gone. Spent. And... no regulation. This guy was operating this multi-billion-dollar company in QuickBooks. QuickBooks is for you and me, Carrie.
Yeah, I know.
And there was no board of directors. There was no governance board. There was no policy board. It was him. And, you know, whether we like it or not, it was unregulated. And, you know, I'm the first person to say we have too many regulations. We have regulation creep in America today that is god-awful. But they let this guy get away with it. And come to find out, he was the largest donor to both Republicans and Democrats, took his money. Now, one of my son's best friends is a security regulator, an accountant, forensic accountant. He sat in Bernie Madoff's chair for 2 years. He said a kid could have found this problem. The problem is now he authorizes the clawback from people that were made whole years ago. Now, we're going to see what America's built of. Our representatives, senators, are going to get. We should be clawing back that donations they have. Again, both Republicans and Democrats. And if they resist this, we're going to see what they're made of. Because now they're going to not have fund money available to them. So that's what's going to occur in the marketplace. It's going to be interesting to see if the first one that's going to raise their hand and say, I feel right to give this money back right now.
That'd be the right thing to do, right?
That's the right thing to do. But we're going to see what kind of Americans they are and how they represent America.
Hey, Jack, we're going to take a short break here. We worked through these difficulties of tech this morning here, but we'll be right back, listeners, with more Money Matters with Kerry Cooley and Jack Godfrey.
And Jack Godfrey, stay with us.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC and Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Good to be with you, Kerry.
Hey, awesome. It is awesome. It's been a while since you and I have been on the air together, so this is great. And hoping everybody out there and listeners, thanks for listening. Hey, we've talked about Jerome Powell, the increase in interest rates, FTX, current CDs. You know, I touched on this a little bit earlier, Jack, but current CD rates, I think a lot of people don't realize that we have CDs that are FDIC insured just like the regular bank CDs. They don't realize that we can get them. And we've had some great rates out there between 4.7 to 4.8 at the one-year rate, and that's excellent.
Well, there's people wondering why we haven't talked about it before, because why would we talk about a CD for 0.25%?
Exactly.
I mean, that's why we haven't talked about it. Interest rates have been low for so long. Why would you want to talk about that? So, you know, we're talking about it now just because it makes sense, if it is. And lots of people, you know, we always want to make sure, especially retirees, have a good cash flow. And lots of times, you know, I've talked to people this week, well, you know, we've got 40 here, 60 there. What are we going to do? And then I go, well, 4.8. Well, you know, while you're waiting around, that's not a bad place to put it.
Yeah, sometimes we call it lazy money, money that we can get working harder for you, but keeps it fairly liquid, meaning that you can buy anything from a one-month CD on out to 2 or 3 year CDs. We're finding that the one-year and lower rates tend to be kind of the sweet spot to be right now as far as rates. If you go longer, that tells us something. Banks out there aren't willing to tie up money at a higher rate for, you know, longer than 1 year, because they know interest rates can fluctuate. They know they can go up. They also know they can go down. So that's where we're kind of finding the sweet spot with that. Let's talk.
Well, we also, you know, why us versus the banks? We don't make any money on CDs.
Yep.
Banks have to make money somewhere. They're going to make it on the spread, meaning what they can invest for, what they can get as a return, and what they're going to loan it to the customer for. So you're giving them money that they're going to invest. So that's the difference. We don't need a spread because we're not making any profit on it. We're doing this as a customer service issue. That's what it is. I mean, it's not an issue, but we offer those at no cost to you. But again, the bank has to make a spread, and that's the difference. We don't charge you a spread.
Yep. Let's talk about year-end strategy. It's year-end. Required minimum distributions have to be taken out before year-end. When a person turns now 72, a required minimum distribution has to take out of their IRAs. Not Roths, but their regular IRA. And if they're 70 and a half and older, they can still calculate the RMD and gift that to nonprofits.
Yeah, it's so there's a lot of confusion, Kerry. A lot of confusion is when can we donate? Well, you can donate starting at 70 and a half. There's no RMD at 70 and a half, but if you're 70 and a half, Kerry, like I am, I'm 70 and a half, that's where the money's going to be coming from, is a donation from the IRA. At 72, the government says you have to take money out. That's required minimum distribution. There's a lot of confusion in this. And wait, I think the SECURE Act 2 is going to pass in probably the next 12 days. The SECURE Act 2 says you, starting next year, 2023, the RMD might go to 73. 2024, go to 74. 2025, the RMD is going to be 75. That's what the SECURE Act 2 does, and I think they're going to pass that.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do now if you haven't made your donations? You can take out as much as you want out of your IRA and gift it. Now, being that your account's down, what's worse, paying no tax or taking it out of the bank? Well, that depends on where your money is. I mean, lots of people have cash in their IRA that they could be giving to a nonprofit. Why do they have cash? It's because we're accumulating cash, and they take it out every month, and sometimes we have an excess because people want to use it for whatever, play money. We always want to make sure it's in their budget. So that's why I would not liquidate a growth fund or income or a growth and income fund to now give it to the church. That does not make sense. But if you have cash in your IRA, that's where you should be giving it away.
So, Jack, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've been working through some of the things this morning, but let's talk about, you know, we hear the big thing in the news right now, recession. We hear that word often. We hear deep recession. We hear soft landing. We hear mild recession. You know, in reality, nobody knows if we're going to have a recession. We don't know how long it will last if we do have one. Those are things, a crystal ball you need to have to tell the future. Nobody knows. But, you know, it seems to be the big word in the media right now. And let's just talk to our listeners a little bit about some strategies when it comes to investing if we do have a recession. The key word there, if. You know, we don't know. But definitely one of the things we always tell clients, no matter whether we're going into a recession, we're in a recession or not in a recession, you should always have emergency money. You should always have money on hand that you can get your hands to cover expenses. You know, everybody's comfort level when it comes to emergency money is a little different. But rule of thumb is 3 to 6 months of living expenses. You should have an emergency, like a savings account, accounts where you can get this money out without penalty. We're not talking about investments, but that's one of the biggest things is a kind of a starting point, a base when we hear the word recession. But what are some other thoughts when it comes to investing, when it comes to your portfolio, Jack?
Well, I mean, more than ever is the constantly having a portfolio where you're buying stuff every month, every quarter, every 6 months. And where does that come from? It comes from a couple of different things. It comes from interest being generated in your account. For all the retirees that are our customers out there today, you were able to retire because we drew a picture on the whiteboard that says, this is where we're going to generate money to support your retirement. That means you've got maybe a pension, you've got Social Security, which your raise is going to show up in your next check in January. And you're comfortable because we've designed that picture. However, your equity account is down 20 to 25%. But we're giving you the interest. But what you don't see in the background is, we have growth and income funds that you're buying. Is to say, an example is a bank stock, which gives a dividend. And I can just say across the board, the dividends for bank stocks is somewhere north of 3%. Every quarter, you're buying more shares. So that means for the last year, basically a year, because things started going down in January of last year, every quarter this year in 2022, you bought more shares of that bank stock, and we reinvested that, so you bought more shares. Another strategy is we have, you're creating excess income in your portfolio, so we are buying into growth or growth in income into either ETFs or mutual funds. And so we want you to think about, how can I get more cows in the field? Well, that's pretty easy. You have more calves.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, you know, you have to look at your calf as that dividend, as that dividend. And when that calf grows up, if it's a heifer, you're going to now get a dividend from that. So it's just one of those concepts is we're trying to get you to buy more stuff when things are down. We're not going to be in this forever, Kerry. You know, when we're going to be out of it, it depends on how active our listeners are with their government officials.
Yep.
And Kerry, I write to these people. I'm going to be writing to our Ways and Means Committee this week to talk about Secure Act. So I'm not an activist, but they hear me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to have more of is like we're disappointed in our policies of the government.
Absolutely. Hey, Jack, we're going to take a short break here. Be right back with more talking about how and strategies to invest during a recession. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back, listeners, with Money Matters. And welcome back, listeners. You're listening to Money Matters. Hey, we are talking about some ideas, thoughts, strategies, how to invest during a recession. And like we said earlier, we officially are not in a recession. We're not saying we're going to go into a recession. We're just saying, hey, what are some ideas, thoughts, strategies? We talked about, you know, making sure you have enough savings. Jack, you talked about dollar cost averaging or reinvesting those dividends so that you get more, as you put it, heifers in the field growing up from and building that portfolio. Another strategy that is always good is buying what we call defensive stocks in a recession or consumer discretionary. And what I mean by that is, you know, utility stocks fall into that sector, consumer staples. So, you know, companies that make food products, make beverages, those type of companies tend to be good during a recession because guess what? We pay our utility bills. We still eat. We still drink. Those are all things we still do. And that's another strategy for investing in a recession.
Yeah, Kerry, there's a couple other areas that have popped up. And, you know, since we are farmers, we own farm ground. Commodities are not really looked at, kind of an outlier, not recommending them, but they are a category that some people might want to investigate. You know, I always look at where things are year to date, where are things for the last 3 months. And, you know, people's portfolio carry in the last 3 months have done fairly well. They forgot to take a look at that. So, you know, commodities is one that, you know, people might want to take a look at. Bean prices are up, corn prices are up, milk prices are up. That's one category that people forget to talk about because year to date, and I'm just not recommending it. I am just reporting it. Year to date, the commodity index is up 17%. The 1 year is up 21%. The 3 year, it's up 13%. And that falls back on what we just did in terms of the harvest. Harvest this year was good in Michigan. We had the right amount of planting time. We had the right amount of rain, had a little bit of dry period, but it was a good commodity year in the agriculture area. Now, with that being said, you also got diesel prices carry around $6. Next year's planting fertilizer prices are out of sight. So what other commodities you might want to take a look at, but I'm just saying the commodities is something you might want to take a look at. And, you know, we are not a great supporter of foreign, but, you know, it's a lot. They don't have the recession problems that we do. They have other problems, but across the board, international was up significantly in the last 3 months, not up to date, but it is up more than we are in all the emerging markets, the European market, the Pacific market, and Japan, all those major indexes of international and emerging markets are up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, I would tell people, and you could see in the portfolio, I was not a big fan of international. Now I think you might want to dab your foot back in it again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and another way we think of international investing, too, is if you're buying U.S. companies, a lot of these U.S. companies invest overseas, too. So indirectly, we're getting some return there. But, you know, consumer staples, Jack, as you mentioned, food, beverages, household products, they're fairly recession-proof, you know, because no matter how poorly the economy is doing, people still need to eat, use toilet paper. You know, demand for utilities, you know, they hold up in a recession. And, you know, healthcare is another sector is that performs well. So if you look at year-to-date numbers in those areas that I just mentioned, you know, consumer staples is up year-to-date 1.2%. Energy, as I mentioned before, is up over 60% year-to-date. Healthcare is basically been flat. It's up about 0.5%, and utilities are up 3.6. So all the areas year-to-date that are up in the green are all the areas I just mentioned that are considered defensive or somewhat recession-proof during a recession.
Yeah, and, you know, people want to know what happened to bonds. Well, it's pretty easy. You raise rates, bond prices are going down. You know, and we've been in a inflation across the board. I don't care what type of bonds you're looking at year to date. Things are down 8 to 20% in the bond market because of rising rates. People forgot about 87. They forgot about what happened during Jimmy Carter. Bonds were not good except on the higher end. They got the interest rate. But if they were holding the bag with the bonds at lower rates, things were not good for them. So, you know, people like rising rates. Insurance companies do. Banks do. People in CDs do. But if you're holding the bag on bonds in your portfolio, in your 401k, 403b, 457, simple stuff, et cetera, they have not performed. They have performed exactly like the equity market, and they're down.
Yeah, they have. You know, another important thing, you know, during a recession, if we do have one or things is, you know, don't overreact. You know, it's, you know, buy good quality, look at a longer term perspective with that portfolio, because you tend to do better by not overreacting. You tend to do better by staying invested in good quality investments. You know, recessions can be challenging for returns and growing wealth, but we also see, you know, counter-cyclical rallies. There's, you know, there's truly things out there that are good to invest in this type of market. And, you know, one of the other keys, and I say this often, you know, is stay fully invested. Because in the last 30 years, if you an investor missed 25 days, best days in the market over those 25 years, missed those 25 best days, that's less than one day a year, Jack, the return goes from an average of 10.9 down to 5.6% by missing those 25 days. And nobody knows when those 25 days are, but, you know, key is don't overreact to these big swings in the market. Step back from the news that we hear every day. Jack, we're at the end of our show. What is our next show and topic coming up?
Terry, I don't have that slide.
All right. So that is digital financial apps that can be helpful for you to try. So we're going to talk about some of the digital things in this world. Listeners, thanks for listening. You've been listening to Money Matters with Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Gottfried. Enjoyed it, Kerry. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for listening to Money Matters on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC. If you need help with your personal financial needs or goals, please call us at 616-931-1223 or Google Cooley Gottfried Investment Group in Zealand. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investment or investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Join us next week for Money Matters on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC.